Thank you very much. It's a great honor to open the Quantum Foundation seminar this turn. And well, I would like to tell you a bit about our joint work with Paweł and Ryszard Horodecki from Gdańsk and Tomasz Miller from Krakow. Well, the paper is on the archive right now. Well, it's about causality. So first thing about causality is that it's a very large notion, and there are many different notions of causality. Well, already Aristotle told us that there are four different types of causes, and in natural sciences we are only interested in the efficient causes. But even there, many people have different things in mind when they talk about causality. They can have causal inference or relativistic causality or whatever else. So here we're in the spirit of relativistic causality. And well, it all starts at the same point with the EPR controversy. EPR controversy. What Einstein told us is that there seems to be an action at a distance implied by quantum mechanics, that the quantum entanglement could facilitate a superluminal information transfer. That was in 1935. Well, then it took a few decades to realize that it is not actually the case. Although the correlations in quantum mechanics are stronger than the classical ones, they do not allow for a superluminal information transfer. Entanglement does not imply superluminal information transfer. Okay, so more generally, one can say that, well, you can consider entanglement, but you can consider any other type of correlations you might imagine. And these guys should not imply the superluminal information transfer. And this lack of this implication, this is usually understood as the no signaling principle. Signaling principle. Well, and what we know is that, well, this principle is satisfied in classical mechanics, it is satisfied in quantum mechanics. But there are other theories, let's say post-quantum, which can allow for stronger correlations or some other structures like quantum causality, etc. But still, they do not allow for superluminal information transfer. So there seems to be more room for new physics here. Okay, so first point is, if you are talking about no signaling principle, then it implicitly assumes some space-time structure. Implicitly assumes some space-time structure. Well, because after all, if you have Alice here, and you have a Bob here, and you say that you don't want them to, you want them to be space-like separated, well, it means that there is some causal structure behind it, typically the cone structure. And once you draw the cones, you really see that, okay, Bob is outside of the Alice light cone, and therefore they are space-like separated. Okay, but just to formulate the principle, you need to assume some causal structure in the space-time. But that's not everything, because that's just one moment in time. When you say, okay, at this moment in time, when they make a joint measurement or one of them makes a measurement, there cannot be any information transfer here. No, this cannot happen, right? But if you want to think in terms of physics, the laws of physics are essentially the dynamical laws. So there is a process ongoing. So there must have been a preparation event in the past. And Well, Alice and Bob, they should eventually meet and compare their results to see what, well, to understand the experiment they really did. And there are some hints that things can, different things can happen if you consider the entire process. So in this picture, you do assume the some time direction and some space, because you say, well, this happened before and this happened after, so there is some notion of time. Okay, and for instance, there's a nice work by Pavel Horodetsky and Ravi Ramanathan. I'll give you the archive number, 1611 06781. Okay, it's published in Nature Communications, and what they have shown is that you can consider a theory in which there is an eavesdropper somewhere here, which is space-like separated to both Alice and Bob, and what he or she does is, well, she doesn't signal neither to Alice nor to Bob, but what she does, she modifies the correlation, the correlations. But Alice and Bob would not see it only until they meet. But when they meet, it's already okay. There's no causality violation here, because when they meet in the future of Eve. So there is no causality violation, but there is something more, because you can somehow signal to the correlations. Okay, so this shows you that you should really take into account the full process that happens in this causal diamond. But to do so, you firstly need some structure of a spacetime. Now, the most, general structure and the most, simplest structure that you can consider is something that we call an effective spacetime. Effective spacetime. Okay, just a 1 minute digression. This is something that you can find in another paper of ours. It's here, 04117. And this thing, we call it the experiment paradox. And it's very provocative, so I invite you to read it. But that's a somewhat different story. But one of the concepts that we developed there is the concept of an effective space-time. And our line of reasoning is the following. You can have many different theories. You can say that, the space-time is a Lorentzian manifold, as it is in general relativity. Well, you can say, well, I prefer to have it to have a discrete model, maybe some space-time foam or spin network or whatever. Or you can say, well, maybe it's there's some non-commutative space-time. It's a non-commutative space. I studied these for some time. Or you can say that there is no space-time at all. But at the end of the day, you must make an experiment. And if you make an experiment has an input and has an output. And these things are objective, because otherwise it's no good experiment. I mean, you need to tell the people what you have learned, right? And so the effective space-time, this is something, well, it's the space-time in which the actual experiments come from. So how do you compute the statistics? That's a different story. That's the question of the model. The effective space-time is a very simple structure. So you have a set M, which consists of points which you call events. It should have some causal structure. Causal structure, which in terms of mathematics means a partial order relation. Partial order relation. And if you want to consider any dynamics, well, you need a notion of a time, which means that you need a splitting of M, let's make it right, into I and space, okay? And I, this is a subset of R. Well, this splitting doesn't need to be, and typically it is not unique, non-unique. Okay, so as we know from GR, the space-time is an invariant object, but both time and space are observer-dependent concepts. Okay, so now, once you have it, you can make sense out of this picture. You say, okay, here's my space, here is my time, it's my causal structure, and now I know that these events are space-like separated because they are not causally related, and this one is related, is in the past of this one, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and the no-signaling principle, you study it in terms of, well, you consider correlations, you need a composite system, like two particles, entangled state or whatever, and you consider the signaling via correlations. But there is a second phase of the no-signaling principle, which you can call the dynamical no-signaling. Dynamical no signaling. And this is related to the inherent evolution of objects, like a particle or whatever else. So to guide your intuition, let's start with something classical. That's easy. Well, you have a particle sitting here, and it goes along a word line. It stays within the cone at every time moment, here and here and here. Okay, this is nice causal evolution. Well, if you have a particle which does not behave that well and it would go out of the cone at some point, actually at this moment, well, this is acausal. Okay, well, and this is bad. Because it leads to logical paradoxes. Well, just to remind the argument, the situation is the following. So you have a word line of Alice here. You have a word line of Bob. Okay, and now that's the light cone of Alice, that's the light cone of Bob. Need a different color. Okay, and then we have a, suppose you have a Charlie here and a Dave here. Okay, I should write it. Okay. And then what can happen is that if Alice signals to Bob like that, then the surface of simultaneity for Charlie and Dave is different because the axes are as follows. So that's a rest frame. Well, it should be the other way around. Let's put T here. The Lorentz transformation does something like that to the axis. So if then Charlie, so Alice signals to Bob, Bob passes it on to Charlie, Charlie signals to Dave, and then Dave is already in the past of Alice. So he can then prevent Alice from sending the message, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so you see that if you assume the structure of a relativistic spacetime, well, the violation of causality leads to logical paradoxes. Okay, very well. But these are classical particles, so you can think of classical particles as the word lines as being composed of events. Okay, it's, well, it's an objective thing, it's an objective information, so that's just a collection of events. Whenever you find an event which is not causally related to the other one, that's already bad. But what happens with the quantum particles? Because quantum particles, they don't have a position and they don't have a momentum. And certainly, they don't have the two at the same time. Okay, so The picture is not like that. It's rather something like that. It's a particle which then evolve and can spread. Bifurcate it like that. Whoop. Okay. The space-time structure is still there. There's time, there is space here. Okay, so there are two questions. So the first question is, what does it mean to evolve causally for a quantum particle? Causally. And the second thing, which is of course related, is how does it actually affect the measurement statistics? Because this is what we really care about. How it affects statistics. Well, because it's not clear what one should do here. Because well, you can draw the cone structure, but then what are you going to say? That it should not leak out of the cone, but which cone? This one, or maybe another one, or maybe all of the cones? How do you even formulate it? So the question A, that's something we've been studying with Tomek for quite a moment. Well, you can find the details here. That's a Fizer-Revey paper. And there you can find the reference to the mathematics as well. Okay, so the starting point is that, well, as I told you, you need to split your space-time into time and space. So you make the slicing. I have the slices. Okay, so let's call this one sigma s and this one sigma t. And once you have it, how do you model the quantum object or whatever on this, or the measurement statistics? Well, you need a probability density, or more correctly speaking, a probability measure. Okay, so that's a basic object. Mu t is a probability measure on sigma t. Okay, well, a probability measure is a very simple object. It just takes any measurable set of your space, and it gives you a number between 0 and 1, which you are eager to interpret as the detection statistics. Okay, so let's try to think, how can one define a nice partial order on this space? So guide your intuition. First, consider the following situation. So there is a measure which is compactly supported. Okay, so it only lives here. And then it spreads. And then you say, well, if I draw a cone here, well, you can see that there is some excess here and there, which is outside of the cone. Okay, it was supported here. The start, and there's something leaking out, so this is no good. You would say that this is not a good situation. But then, this is indeed a necessary condition, but not a sufficient one. Let's consider the following situation. You have a measure which is compactly supported. Some big bump here, let's see, smaller here. Okay, and then there's a second measure, which is again compactly supported. But then the big bump has moved here. So you say that, well, although the supports are now causally related, you see that the weight here has traveled here, and that's no good. And then, well, you can have measures which do not have compact support. So then again, the problem is even more harsh. It turns out that the good The good definition is the following. If and only if, for all compact sets, compact set of the support of mu, the probability should not leak out of the cone. Okay, J plus of K. Okay, so for simplicity, okay, I fix the time moments. Okay, so this is mu s and this is mu t. Okay, and this small J plus of K is just the, well, it's just the intersection of the J, big J with the sigma t. Well, because this is a space-time set. Okay, that's the entire cone, so you need to intersect it with the surface. So we say that two probability measures on time slices are causally related if and only if, for all compact sets in the support of mu, the following inequality must hold. Okay? Well, so that's mathematics.
Question?
Yes.
The definition you rejected, where the peak has moved faster than the light cone.
Yeah.
A bit worried about you rejecting that, because it seems to me that there are examples where that does happen that doesn't violate causality. So these tunneling examples, if I have some wave pattern and then it goes through a barrier, the wave function that comes out corresponds to the ones that were at the front of the packet. So the mean of the wave packet does in fact travel faster than the speed of light. So there was all these papers about tunneling faster.
Yes, actually.
It is explained.
Well,
this way.
Okay. Actually, the situation is even more dramatic. But I think I have to keep it to the end, if you allow me. So I will first tell you about the mathematics, because for the moment it's just we were interested in defining a partial order relation on a set. Okay. And then.
Reject that second one.
Yes, I do.
Violates causality.
Yes, I do.
So I'm saying that does not violate causality.
Well, I claim that if this happens, then you have a logical paradox.
But then that's exactly...
Well, that's a theorem.
That's exactly what happens in tunneling experiments that have been done.
No, then it means that there is a problem with the model that you use to compute the probabilities. Okay, maybe let me... postpone this discussion to the end of the talk, okay? If you allow me. It's just I agree that actually, okay, it's an anecdote. I can tell you that when we first sorted this thing out with Tomek, I did my PhD in mathematics. I was interested in math. I said, well, okay, I want a nice causal relation on this set. Is there any? And it turns out that yes, there is this one. And okay, we have shown that this is a nice partial order. Partial order. That's done. And moreover, it's a splitting independent notion. That's very important. Splitting independent. Okay, so any two observers, well, they might have different measures, different evolutions, but they will always agree whether what they see is causally related or not. Okay, so that's about the mathematics. And okay, just one more thing about mathematics, and then I will go to physics. There is a nice equivalent formulation of this thing. Which is the following. So there exists a probability measure on M square such that mu is a left marginal, mu is a right marginal, mu is a right marginal, and J plus is a full set. What is J plus? J plus is just a set of all pairs of events that are causally related. Okay, so this is a definition that comes from the optimal transport theory. And what it essentially tells you that is, you can write it as follows, that each infinitesimal part of the probability distribution must travel along a future-directed causal curve. So the picture is as follows. So if you have one time slice here, the second one here, and you have a measure, say here, another measure here, then, well, if you think of in terms of, say, piles of dust, clouds of dust, then each parcel of this dust must travel along a future-directed causal curve. But these things are infinitesimal, so they can merge, they can bifurcate, and of course it's, well, the family of these curves is not unique. Okay, so there's a nice interpretation in terms of optimal transport, and this definition is equivalent to the one with the compact sets. And there are also other characterizations, but let's now move on towards physics. Okay. So, point B. Well, first thing is about the interpretation of this thing. Now, how should it really be read? Is that this gives you a probability of a click, detector click, if if K is filled with detectors. Okay, so let me stress that the correct interpretation of this number is that it is a purely potential statistic. So it answers the question, what is the probability of detecting a signal if you put a detector which fills the entire volume K? If you don't put a detector, then nothing happens because there is nothing to happen. Okay, so as Perez put it, unperformed experiments have no outcomes. Right, so, the probability rules are very easy. So the probability of a detection, provided you have launch the detector, is just mu of k. The probability of no click, if you have triggered the detector, is 1 minus mu of k. If you don't place a detector, then nothing can happen. Okay, so this is just one. There's just no outcome. There's no outcome at all. Now, if we want an operational picture of these objects, we need to understand what's going on if we make a measurement on the first time slice or if we don't make a measurement on the first time slice. Okay, so we need to consider the conditional probability measures, like that. Okay, so this is a probability measure. conditioned by measurement in K at time moment S. Okay, so that's a measurement. This is MK. Measurement or the lack of the measurement. Okay, so one obvious consistency condition that if you don't make a measurement, that must be the same measure because nothing changes. All right, so now we are at the position to formulate the dynamical no signaling principle. Can you see here? Good. Okay. Well, and it says like that. So for all time moments, for all compact sets on the first time slice, and for all compact sets on the second time slice outside of the light cone of this K, you must have nu of C1 equal nu of C0. Okay? And so the picture is the following. If you have a spacetime here, you have your compact set here, it's its future cone, and you have another set which is here. This is C. And what the principle says is that whatever the evolution is, well, you cannot, by making or not making a measurement here, you cannot change the local statistics, local detection statistics here. Okay, so that's fairly intuitive. However, there is a subtlety because we are working in an effective spacetime. So the actual signaling protocol requires a single event for a sender and a single event for a readout. Okay, because well, at the end of the day, it's about the decision to send the zero or send the one to trigger the protocol. And here we have a sets which can have a different topology, different shapes. Well, this is just 1+1 dimension, but you can easily imagine this guy being a ring. Situation like this, K is here, and then your C is here. Okay, so it is outside of the future light cone. But if you try to make a single sending event, it would have to be here in the past. So it is causally related with the reception. Okay, so you see that it's not the end of the story. Well, if the situation is as it is on the picture, that's easy because you have a single sending event here and you gather the information here and you can see that the points, the events are now space-like separated. So the theorem says that, okay, let's call this guy NS. If NS is violated, then C can always be chosen such that there is a single readout event, but you might require multiple sending events, like in this case. J plus of pi. Okay, so pi not causally related with Q. Okay, so this is because the set K can have different topologies. So to make this story simpler, just consider this set to be disconnected. So it has one part which is here and the second part which is here. So the full K is K1, some K2. So you need one event and you need a second event here. But what you can do is you can coordinate the action of the two senders, for example, by giving them a singlet state or a GHZ state in general, if there's more of them. And in this way, well, you know that if this guy, well, and they measure sigma z. So you know that if this guy gets zero, this one must get a zero. If this one gets one, this one gets one. But you don't know a priori whether they will get a zero or one. So what actually happens if they do a measurement and they trigger the detectors or not trigger, conditioned upon the measurement result on this GHZ, is that they communicate the outcome of a random measurement outside of their light cone. So it is an operational signaling. Okay, so that's the dynamical no signaling principle. Now, how does it relate to the story we developed with Tomek? Now, as I told you, this is the evolution of a purely potential statistic. So it only answers the question, what happens if you put a detector, but it doesn't say anything about these conditional measures. So you need some condition on the measurement. So one thing you can do is to consider demolition measurements. Okay, like an absorption of a photon in a silicon detector. So the space-time picture is following. You have some object which might spread, and then you measure it here. Okay, there's a detection here, and then, well, you get a number which you write down on a blackboard or on a piece of paper. So that's already an objective, or classical, if you wish, information. Okay? So since it is a classical information, you don't want it to go outside of the light cone. Okay? So the axiom would say that if you did perform a measurement and you did register your signal here in the set K at a moment S. Okay, there's a moment S here. Then the signal must now stay within your light cone. Okay. So this should be one. Okay, that's about the demolition measurements. If you consider non-demolition measurements, you say, well, okay, this induces some non-trivial constraints on what is happening in the measurement process and what is not happening. And if you consider just the demolition measurement absorption, that seems to be a reasonable condition. And in anything, it's a mild one. Now, it turns out that if you take this one and you add the no signaling, the dynamical no signaling principle, these two conditions already imply this causal evolution story. Just to give it a name, this is C. Okay, so in other words, under the assumption of this axiom about the measurement process, if you violate the causal evolution, you get a operational violation of the signal, of the no signaling principle. Okay, so, well, You see that this is somewhat surprising because, well, I told you this causal evolution condition is actually, it's inspired by the classical notions of a transport along future-directed causal curves, etc., etc., classical objects. Then you say, wait, but quantum objects, they are not really modeled by probability distributions, but rather by wave functions. So there is some interference going on. What really evolves is the causal, well, is the wave function and not the probability distribution. Nevertheless, well, that is the theorem. So if you only assume this condition and you violate the causal evolution condition, then you get an operational superluminal signaling. Well, you can say that, well, this condition is still a bit tricky. So what you can do, but you need to assume something about the measurement. You can consider another situation in which you do make a measurement, but you don't get a result. You don't register a particle. So let's call it A2. So what happens now is that a particle evolves. Well, it might spread, move, and then you make a measurement here. And then you don't get a result. Your detector didn't click, although it was on. So what happens is that, well, here you have zero, but outside there can be no change. Okay? So if there's someone sitting outside, he or she cannot feel whether you cannot distinguish between the situation in which you did a measurement and did not register a particle, and in a situation where you didn't make a measurement, okay? Because if you can distinguish between these two situations, then obviously you can signal, right? So it's written like that. Okay, let's give it now a name. It's called A2. So the probability measure conditioned upon the negative result of a measurement in K. Okay. Put it C. Well, the only thing that must happen is a renormalization, because it's zero here, but it must remain a probability measure. So you need to renormalize it. Okay, and it should hold for all compact sets outside of the future light cone of JK. Okay, so you have a condition. So this tells you what happens if you don't do anything. This tells you what happens if you make a measurement and register a signal. And this tells you what happens if you make a measurement and do not register a signal. And the relationship between all these conditions is fairly enjoyable. Let me try to draw it. So if you have a A1 here, A2, and NS. Okay, let's take more colors. Okay, so it turns out that if you assume A1 and NS, you can. If you assume A1 and NS, you get A2. If you, let's put red color, that's better. If you assume A2 and NS, you get A1. And if you assume A1 and A2, you get the NS. And the CE condition sits here above everyone. So what the proposition says is that A1 and NS imply CE. Let's take the green color. Let's see that. This one and this one imply CE. And it turns out that if you take A2 instead of A1, you get the implication. And if you take just A1 and A2, you again get the implication. Okay, so as you see, all roads leads to causal evolution condition. Okay, now this is somewhat perturbing for from the physical point of view. Why? Well, I don't know much about this tunneling experiments, but one thing that can be shown, well, is that try to understand when is this condition actually satisfied. So let's put it here, more space and physics. Consider first the non-relativistic Schrödinger equation. dt psi p square over 2m psi. Okay, well, you just take the measure to be the modulus square. Okay, and well, it turns out that this guy violates the CE condition. It does violate the CE condition. That's something we have shown with Tomek in our first paper. And now we understand that, well, under this condition, it entails superluminal signaling. But, well, this equation is nice after all. But then you say, well, okay, this is a non-relativistic Hamiltonian, so it's not really surprising. So why don't we take this Hamiltonian? Plus m square. This guy is Lorentz invariant. Well, it turns out that this guy also violates the causal evolution condition. Well, and that's slightly more perturbing, because you say, well, there's something wrong. But again, the mathematics tells you that it is operational. So what is going on? Even more dramatically, you can say, well, okay, it's non-interacting, so maybe if you add some potentials, it's going to stabilize or so. Well, not really, because there is something called the Hegerfeld theorem. Hegerfeld theorem. Well, it's a theorem from the 70s. Which essentially tells you that if you start with an initial state with a compact support, and you evolve it with any positive definite Hamiltonian, then there is a leak out of probability outside of the. Which, according to our findings, leads to operational superluminal signaling. Okay. Now, what we have shown with Tomek is that we found explicit examples for this guy, but also for this guy. When you start with a non-compact initial state, and it still violates the condition. Okay. This, well, Hegerfeld had an example in 1985, etc. So. You see, there were two arguments against the Hegerfeld theorem from the point of view of physics. First one was that, well, there are no compactly supported initial states anyway, because if you take the Dirac equation, then you can show that the only, well, wave packet with a positive energy frequencies, that it must have a non-compact support. Okay, but we have shown that, well, okay, even if you start with something non-compact, it still violates causality. On the other hand, people said that, well, okay, it's not operational. We showed that, no, it is operational. So are there any good examples? Well, there are. Well, we found only two. First one is Dirac, and the second one is Maxwell. Maxwell or the photon wave function, if you wish. So these guys, okay, let's take the blue thing, do satisfy the CE condition. So they are perfectly causal for any initial state. This is surprising for another reason, because if you write the Dirac equation as a Schrödinger equation, well, it doesn't have positive energies in general. Okay, and we show that it doesn't really matter. Well, you can have a packet with mixed energies, and then there's Sitter-Bewegung and Klein paradox and all of these different weird phenomena, but it still evolves causally. Okay, so what is the lesson of all that? And that's my take-home message. Well, let me maybe put it here. So usually people ask the question, is a model signaling? Then if you discover that your model is signaling, then you reject it. You say it's a bad model. But if you do so, well, we are telling you that then you should throw away a bulk of wave mechanics, which we don't want to do. So we're asking the wrong question. You should rather ask, how much is a model signaling? Now, the good point about considering the dynamical aspect of all that, so being on a space-time, is that there are natural scales that appear here. So you can ask, when is the causality violated, where it is violated, and how much? So you have a time scale. T minus S. Now you have a natural length scale. Which is the volume of your compact set out of which you can signal. Because the good point about this definition is that, well, if you want to show that something is strictly no signaling, you need to prove it for every compact set. But if you want to show that it's violated, you just need to find one. Okay, but the question, the physical question, is how big is this set? And then you can compute the, say, channel capacity, the superluminal channel capacity. Which you define as a maximum in zero, and the difference between these two is right, zero and one. Okay, because of course this is only a statistical signal, so you would need many of these weird particles to send an actual signal. So the good question is, how many of them would you actually need? Okay, so concerning these examples, well, if you try to model, you use this model to, say, describe a free motion of an electron, then you're doing it in the wrong way. Because you will see that the probability distribution, it leaks really fast, and it's a persistent effect. So you're getting wrong and wrong and wrong, and more wrong. But if you consider the Bose-Einstein condensate, then so your initial wave packet is, well, it's not a femtometers, it's a nanometer wave packet, and it has a mass of several atoms. Then you discover that the causality is indeed violated, but the characteristic scale of it for Bose-Einstein condensate is of the order of hundreds of kilometers. Okay, so you say, well, okay, I don't really care because it's well beyond the domain, the applicability of the model. Now, if you try to use this one to model the, say, evolution of an electron, what you see is that the causality violation effects are transient. What do I mean by that? Is that, the causality gets violated, there is some probability leaking outside of the cone, but then it somehow catches up and the effect disappears. And the characteristic scale, time scale of this is the time of Sitter-Bewegung, which is for the electron, it's around 10 to minus 22 seconds. And the characteristic length of this effect is the Compton wavelengths. Okay, So again, this is the region where certainly you cannot neglect the quantum field theoretic effects, particle creation, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's my main message and main conclusion from our work is that, well, rejecting a model just because it allows for superluminal signaling might not be a good strategy, at least not always. What you should ask is rather when and where and how much of it happens. Because then you can, and you should invoke this principle to establish the domain of applicability of a given model rather than an overarching principle to reject the theories. Okay, thank you very much.
So for number two, where you have an X, are you considering that to be equivalent to the Klein-Gordon equation, which would be the dt squared, you know, you'd square both sides effectively. Because you have a check mark by Dirac and Maxwell. So
yes.
I'm wondering if Klein-Gordon would get a check mark or an X.
Well, the problem with Klein-Gordon is that there is no well-defined probability density there, right? It's there's no natural probability measure. What you could do, well, this is from what I know, it's not positive definite, right?
Is there really for Maxwell?
Sorry?
Or is there really for, sorry, Dirac? I mean...
Yes, there is one. But for Dirac, you just take psi dagger psi, right?
But that's frame dependent.
Yeah. Well, it's not, well.
That doesn't bother you.
Hmm? No, for Dirac.
Psi depends on the Lorentz frame. So.
For Dirac, you take this.
Yeah, but that's Lorentz frame dependent.
Yes, it is.
But that's okay.
Well, that's okay because if you consider evolution, you need to make a slicing anyway.
You need to make a grain of what we generally consider for Dirac.
Well,
but okay.
No, but the point is the following: the fact whether an evolution is causal or not is not Lorentz dependent, does not depend on the frame, but how much it is violated, well, this can depend upon the frame. Sure. For Dirac, it's actually invariant. I mean, the argument that we have is, it goes through the continuity equation. You can show that this probability density, it satisfies a continuity equation and it turns out to be sufficient. Okay, and the same goes for Maxwell. For Klein-Gordon, I don't really know. We should maybe extend the framework to consider signed measures. We thought about it, but we don't have any good conclusion right now.
So you probably haven't done this either. What about gravitons on a curved background, right? Suppose you believe they're quantum objects. Are they going to screw up or not?
Well, gravitons, but is there a probability density well defined with gravitons?
You have to depend on, but I don't know if there is or is not.
I remember there was an argument by.
I think there should be. I mean, it's understandable for Maxwell, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think that there, as far as I remember, there's an argument by Penrose, his famous book about whistles and space-time, that you, if you try to have a local energy density, you can only do it for spin zero, spin one half, and spin one. If you have spin three half or spin two, this already cannot be done. I don't remember the details, but it was something about the contraction of indices.
That you could possibly do a quasi local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in general, that's our message that, well, we give a principle and some ways to compute it. So then you can consider, I don't know, nonlinear modifications of quantum mechanics, right? People believe that, well, they are usually signaling because there's this argument by Gissin that you can then distinguish between the ensembles of the things, etc. And we say, okay, but if you give us a concrete model with the concrete numbers, you can see if it's really wrong or maybe it's not that wrong because the signaling takes place, I don't know, at the Planck scale or whatever.
So do you consider applying your relation of causality to quantum field theory? Because I think standard quantum field theory, standard causality criteria is microcausality.
Yes.
The advantage is it's simple quantity to compute, but then it seems it only applies to closed systems.
Yes. Well, yeah.
You have this new criteria.
Maybe Kasia will have an idea for quantum field theory.
Yeah, but there is a work of Christian and Spech. I don't know if you're familiar with that from 2018. Sort of like trying to model your sort of situation where you have a system and a probe. As quantum field theoretical objects. So it's very similar to what you're saying, but instead of like points, then you have finite subsets.
Yes.
And this might be, and your thing could maybe be some sort of effective version of that.
Yeah, it might be. It might be.
Have you looked at that?
No, I don't know this. I don't know this paper. So, well, one thing about quantum field theory, because, well, we had discussions when we sorted this paper out. People from quantum field theory would say that, well, it's wrong to think about the probability distributions because, well, there is quantum vacuum and what kind of probability distributions you attribute to a quantum vacuum. But we somehow reverse the argument and we say, well, we want to have a local measurement statistics, so you tell us how to do it and we will tell you whether it's wrong or right. Okay, because at the end of the day the experiments are local. I mean that's also in the spirit of local quantum field theory. You need operators which are localized. But well, yeah, there is a bit of flexibility. You can, for instance, instead of compact sets, you can consider functions because measure act well on function and integrate them. Well, there's yet another characterization which uses the notion of causal functions. And then you can consider it, then you consider your probability measures as mixed states on the commutative C-star algebra of space-time observables. But then you can say, well, what happens if I don't have a commutative sister algebra of observables, but a non-commutative one? Well, if you still have a good effective space-time, which you can derive, and there are measures to do it, then you can apply the same technique, essentially.
Any more? No, let's thank Michael again.